places. Everyone.
We're now broadcasting.
Roll the tape in. 3, 2.
A new audio drama.
Appaloosa Radio is where stories come alive.
Appaloosa Radio offers an original audio drama, City of 4,000 Spies, Trip Home. Trip Home, Chapter 1, Monotony and Boredom.
The Ghana 40 sector lies 167,000 Maku rates from Sasco. The noble son, Dushko Rukka, was there under an assumed name for an assignment of an unspecified nature, working for a sponsoring entity that also operated under an assumed name and carried out actions of an indeterminate kind. Rukka received a secret message from PNB7Q. Return home immediately on first available transport. Return home immediately. The problem was that the inter-sector transport operated only once each fortnight. And the next one was scheduled to depart on the very day that Rukka received PNB7Q's urgent message. He had to tie up his current assignment quickly and make his way across the rustic mining planet to the terminal before the transport departed. Unfortunately, that meant he could not say an appropriate farewell to a recent female companion. She had been extremely valuable in the operation that he had been assigned to complete.
I need to purchase a premier class ticket direct to Sasco for this afternoon's departure.
Buddy, there ain't no premier class cabins on this transport. Just a group of seats in the transport's forward cabin. Our primary cargo comes from the mines. We only carry passengers as a courtesy. 16 seats. No food. No drink. And I have only two left.
Well, I guess that is the way it is going to be.
Rukka carried his own bag up the ramp to the passenger cabin. He was more than pleased to see that they had a pair of Koopsie girls to serve as the cabin stewards. As always, his eyes turned toward the beautiful women. Seats on the transport were arranged in a semicircle. They swirled and had the semblance of a recliner position. Not the worst accommodations, but most certainly not the best. Up a ladder from the passenger cabin was the flight crew deck. Even though the doors to the crew deck were locked, the passengers could see the crew's activities through the large windows that backed the deck. The flight crew included the principal pilot, the first officer, a navigator, and a propulsion engineer. When the ticket agent had said there was no food or drink on the shuttle, he should have said that the transport company provides no amenities. However, another company had a special contract to provide food, beverage, and comfort services on the transport. It was that company that had hired the Coupsy girls. They could get a passenger anything that he or she desired. They could prepare a custom meal with fresh ingredients or bring a beverage or other indulgence. The prices were high and cash on the spot. Still, everything was freshly prepared with the best ingredients.
Miss, I'll have a brushed velvet stew and a monopod braised lightly.
Of course, it was the most expensive item on the extensive menu.
Hold the door, I'm coming aboard. I'm coming aboard.
Do you have a ticket? We are completely sold out.
Yes, here it is.
The ticket is for Mademoiselle Gad. Excuse me, but you do not appear to be Mademoiselle Gad.
She can't come. I am taking her place. I am taking her place.
Welcome aboard, sir. And what is your name?
I'm Asgard, owner of the W786 Manning.
The ticket agent noted his name on the manifest. Then, he moved to the exit, and gave a hand signal to the crew. Ready for departure. The door closed and the transport's old engines began their habitual whine. The trip to Sasko would take 96 Earth revolutions. Strangers sitting in a semicircle in the transport's aging, 20 square meter, passenger cabin. No windows. No onboard entertainment. No private spaces to retreat to. Mirko decided that it was best to begin a casual conversation with each of the other passengers. Of course, he continued in his assumed identity and not his own.
Hello. I am Philo Tetra Tetra. I am on my way back to Sasko. I have family there. My mother's gravely ill. Whom do I have the pleasure of meeting?
Mirko was introducing himself to one of the three women passengers. All three were noble gray ladies of the Erdrift. Thousands of centuries ago, the Empire Shayot founded the Sacred Order of the Noble Grey Ladies of Erdrift. The Sacred Order was tasked with bringing the bodies of the Empire's fallen warriors back to the beloved homeland to be buried with the ancient honors. All of the ladies selected for this task came from the very highest noble families. They were given decades of special training in the Erdrift, the Empire's most sacred religious texts. Once they were prepared spiritually, they began their sacred work. In the Empire Shayot, the Grey Ladies of Erdrift are respected and honored even above the most celebrated military heroes. Mirko knew the story of the Grey Ladies and he knew well the importance that the Empire attached to them. Still, he had a role to play. By beginning conversations now, questions later would be avoided.
Pleased to meet you, sir. We are sisters in poverty seeking to do good where good is needed. I am the Prioress Eugenia. This is Sister Emily and this is Sister Tompi.
And what brings you on this journey?
Yes, it is a journey. We are returning from the Garna sector where we brought relief to those harmed by the Great Catastrophe.
Oh yes, the Great Catastrophe. That was some time ago, maybe even a decade or so.
Yes. We have been serving there for nearly 15 years. We are the last of our contingent to return to our home abbey.
Well, bless you and your noble associates. Work that, I am sure, was much appreciated.
Thank you for your kind words. I will chant this evening for the health of your ailing mother.
Thank you. My warmest regards.
Of course, as a master spy, Mirko knew that the Grey Ladies of the Erdrift were often spies for the Empire Shayot. Rirko had had a close look at the seemingly demure Sister Aimley. He believed that he may have encountered her on a previous mission. Then, she was certainly not demure. No. Rather, she was a fierce warrior fully trained in the combat arts of the Empire. And, the Great Catastrophe. Rirko now believed that it had been caused by a super weapon that the Empire Shiyot had developed, but which had been inadvertently triggered in a systems test. The Grey Ladies did more than just chant for the souls of lost warriors. A few hours after the transport had departed, some of the passengers organized a card game. It was a game that Rirko knew well. Yod is a high-stakes betting game that depends on strategy, knowing when to raise and when to tap the table freezing an opponent's hand. Yod is a favorite of the professional gamblers. Winning consistently requires a player to notice subtle cues exhibited by the other players. If an opponent makes a facial expression or a specific hand gesture, the professionals note the behavior immediately and use that knowledge to gain advantage over others. Rirko chose not to play, watching the players instead. Almost immediately, he noticed that Kenchiri, who claimed to be a sales representative for mining vehicles, was cheating. The other players were not that good, so no one else noticed. Rirko could have joined the game and could have easily cleaned Kenchiri out, but he chose not to.
We'll be on this transport for a long time. I need to live as peaceably as I can with them.
Kenchiri focused his deceptions on the giant underground miner, Lokatal. While the other Yod card players dressed in casual business attire, Lokatal was dressed as if he had just finished his shift in the mine. His clothes carried the dust and deep-colored blotches from the mine. Lokatal was a giant of a man, fully twice the height of his fellow card players. He carried his coins in a leather pouch that after several rounds of Yod was considerably lighter. Rirko suspected that Lokatal did not play Yod often. He seemed confused on his bets. As a result, Lokatal lost heavily. Many sentences of his pay from his dangerous and demanding work in the mines. If Rirko had been one to seek justice, he would have intervened. However, he did not. His one goal was to reach Sasko safely with his assumed identity still intact. The miner Lokatal had been drinking straight shots of a very powerful potion. Finally, its properties began to affect him. He left the game and headed for his seat, where he collapsed in an inebriated stupor. He would have gone unnoticed had his snoring been less deafening. He was louder than the transport's very noisy engines. Rirko opted for a blackout hood, allowing him to peacefully rest among the chaos around him. The transport had 16 seats for paying passengers, a small private cabin in which the flight crew alternated taking their brief naps, and an even smaller, less private, cabin where the two Koopsie girls retreated for some personal space. Their small cabin also doubled as a supply room. Mirko described the space as tight. The passenger area also included three washroom facilities, each with a shower, toilet, and a basin sink. If the storeroom that the Koopsie girls used was tight, then the washrooms could only be described as tiny. In fact, they were so tiny that some of the passengers could not fit inside. Lokital used a basin outside the washroom to do his business in nearly full view of everyone else. And the frog guy and his ever-present doctors could not all fit. Instead, the doctors assembled a small privacy screen and used that area to service the needs of their patient.
Doctor, I am Prioress Eugenia. We would be more than happy to include your patient in our chants this evening.
Before the doctor could respond, there was a loud grunt of disapproval from the frog guy himself.
Thank you for your generous offer, but I do not think our patient would permit it.
Some days later, the Prioress Eugenia approached Mirko privately saying which is the name of the frog guy, does want our spiritual assistance.
UNT does not wish our spiritual assistance. I speak his language and understand his intentions. He is very old, and I know that he is dying. That is why he must always have doctors and close attendants. Many thousands of revolutions ago, UNT was a fierce warrior and an enemy to the Empire Shah Yot. When his people were defeated, he came to this distant sector and began to operate mines. Not long ago, he was the wealthiest individual in the sector. A hard one who still carries much hatred. Nonetheless, I will include him in my evening chants. One can wish goodness and peace on even his tough and unyielding kind.
Mirko found the Prioress Eugenia's comments insightful. He did not speak the language of Umti and he had never encountered an individual of this kind. However, he asked himself, why did she share them with me? Then, he realized. It was the type of sharing that colleagues do. Information that benefits us both. The Prioress Eugenia knew that he was a spy for the Empire Shayot. He did not know how she knew, but she knew. He did not know how she knew, but she knew. Nonetheless, exposure of his status was always dangerous. These women of peace and spirituality, the Grey Ladies of the Urtericht, posed a danger. Mirko needed to be careful. Lacking entertainment, the passengers on the transport, instead, retreated into what Mirko called group solipsism. He quoted from an obscure British philosopher, F.H. Bradley.
It is not possible to take the me out of what I know. I do not experience things directly. All that I know comes from experience, more specifically everything that I know comes from my own experience. I experience my experiences, not anyone else's. They are uniquely mine. Since experiences must be my own experiences, it follows that nothing beyond myself exists.
Nothing beyond the transport craft and its unending monotony exists. The passengers may have once believed that there was a universe beyond their immediate experience, but as the trip ground on, that belief became chimerical. All that exists, all that could possibly exist, are these people, in this place, bound together by boredom and monotony. It was Kenchiri, the purported mining equipment sales representative, but most probably a professional card cheat, who first had the memory that broke the monotony. He looked carefully at the two quietest passengers, sitting next to each other in seats 7 and 8.
I just remembered, where I've seen you two before. You're identical twins, performers at the Rigaratorium. Not headliners, but still a respectable act. Come on. Share something for us. We're bored, we need some entertainment. Come on. Do your act.
The shy pair looked at each other, knowing that in this place at this time there was no other choice. They stood, allowing the heavy covering that had been draped over both at the same time to drop to the deck. The other passengers could see that the twins were now joined at the tail. They were no longer separate entities, they were joined as one. Mirko was the first to speak.
I see that you are now conjoined at your tails. Congratulations. Was your joining recent?
Yes. Yesterday before departure. Our parents opposed it. So we did it in secret. Secret.
I too offer my congratulations. I'll search the Ertri Rat for an appropriate chant. May your lives together be filled with satisfaction and love.
Okay. But let's get some entertainment going. Enough of the congratulations.
The twins looked at each other, and then, after a brief hesitation, began a polyphonal hymn, singing of waterfalls, and sacred rocks, and clouds with nourishing rain. The song filled the passenger area with sweet sound for a full 15 minutes. They concluded with the traditional No Red Roses.
And there are no red roses again.
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 In the fair spring, and in the warm summer sun.
In the fair spring,
the red roses bloom.
And in the warm summer sun, the red roses bloom.
Crimson rouge red roses, soft petals wrapped around a heart of love.
Crimson soft petals wrapped around a heart of love.
The red roses bloom.
The red roses bloom.
The red roses bloom.
The red roses bloom.
Fragrant and sweet. Picked for my love, no thorns had lovely hands to prick.
Fragrant and sweet. Picked for my love, no thorns for gloved hands to prick. The red roses bloom, man. The red roses bloom.
The red roses bloom. The red roses bloom.
But in the fierce winter's frosty cold thorns grown sharp.
But in the fierce winter's frosty cold thorns grown sharp.
And the leaves brown they turn.
And the leaves brown they turn.
And there are no red roses again.
And there are no red roses again. And there are no red roses again.
And there are no red roses again.
And there are no red roses again.
And there are no red roses again. In the fair spring.
and in the warm summer sun.
In the fair spring, and in the warm summer sun. My love smiled with radiant beams.
My love smiled with radiant beams. But in cold winter, she lies in perpetual sleep.
But in cold winter, she lies in perpetual sleep. But in cold winter, she lies in perpetual sleep. And there are no red roses again.
And there are no red roses again. And there are no red roses again.
And there are no red roses again. And there are no red roses again.
Play around with my wife, will you? Now you're dead. You're dead. Both of you are dead.
Just as the music reached a climax, the unmistakable sound of a disruptor weapon rang out. The passengers looked away from the performers to see Mr. Esquad, the owner of the W786 mining operation, standing above the transport's captain, holding a disruptor in his hand. Captain O'Dalsall lay dead on the deck. His entire midriff had been blown away. Esquad had murdered him. Esquad had murdered him. Esquad had murdered him. Esquad had murdered him.
Trip Home Chapter 2 Critical Mistakes.
It was the giant miner Locatel who first sprang into action. He grabbed his squad with four of his six massive arms, spreading him in four different directions and dangling the murderer upside down, as if he were going to eat him for a snack. The disruptor, Model 37, fell to the deck with a loud clank. Mirko immediately grabbed it. Things were much safer with the weapon under his control. Rather than eating the murderer, Locatel squeezed him tightly and then fell on him with his full body weight, precluding any possible escape. Gasping for air, Esquad wiggled and struggled to breathe under the enormous weight of the miner. Eventually, Esquad lost consciousness, but he did not die. The miner's irregular shape created small pockets of air which sustained him. As long as the miner lay on top of him, there was no possibility of his squad's escape. However, the situation was not sustainable. Mirko began to search for a more permanent means of fully restraining the murdering mine owner.
We were listening to the lovely music when I saw Captain Adele Sul come out of the small crew's sleeping cabin and join us in appreciating the concert. The captain was just standing there when his gab pulled the Model 37 disruptor from his travel bag and discharged the weapon into the mid-posterior side of the captain. The weapon was fired at what I judged to be close range, less than a half meter. Death was instantaneous.
I had spoken to Captain Odell Sul only twice during the trip. When I first boarded, he asked me to chant for a safe journey. I did so. A day or so later, I spoke with him again, telling him that I have consulted the omens. I told him things appeared to be very cloudy and uncertain. He told me to have no worries. He had made this journey 23 times previously. There were places of potential peril, he said, but he was a very skilled pilot and knew how to successfully traverse these places. The captain seemed to me to be a person of extreme confidence. Skilled and confident.
I had served under Captain Odell Sul for 5 full trips to and from Sasco. A skilled and capable merchant officer. I was not aware of any relationship between Captain Sul and Asgard's wife. I'm not sure how it could have happened. Captain Sul usually slept aboard the transport craft when we were in port. Our ship's log shows that he did not depart the ship during our stay in the port at Gunnar 40.
While the giant miner Locatel kept his squad squashed beneath him, the first officer, Mirko, and one of the doctors searched for a suitable place to incarcerate the murderer. Their search focused on the contents of the cargo area. Not seeing what he sought, the first officer asked the propulsion engineer to craft a suitable cell from the materials available on the ship. The first officer sought a cell from which there could be no escape and, yet, did not require continual supervision by an armed guard. He also sought a cell that would also prevent a potential suicide. He came to believe that his squad would probably seek to take his own life. Unfortunately, the construction of the new cell took far longer than Mirko thought it should. The first officer rejected the initial efforts of the propulsion engineer, calling them insubstantial, rickety, and flimsy. Soon, the first officer excluded the propulsion engineer completely from the construction process and began to build, instead, a cell of his own design. During this entire process, the first officer and the propulsion engineer left the young navigator, Legi Sun, at the ship's helm. That was to prove a fatal mistake.
I set the course exactly as specified in the navigational notations. At mark 3674, yaw 316, spin 212, grade VZN, speed 2.1 Mach rates. Exactly. No variation. Exactly. But, suddenly it jerked away. Sending us in the opposite direction, directly into the deadly harmonic symbolesis. We were trapped on a wave of rocks. Billions and billions of particles, sweeping over us like a wave. Like a wave. Like a wave.
Trip Home Chapter 3 Game of Imaginary Cards.
Rarko poked the Disruptor Model 37 fiercely into Kenshiri's back.
Do what you are told and you will live.
What's going on?
Do exactly as you are told. Do not ask questions. Climb the ladder to the flight deck. Open the door. Leave it open. Now take a seat in the captain's position.
Rarko sat in the first officer's position opposite him on the other side of the flight console.
Now, Mr. Kenshiri, let's calmly review our situation. We are on a transport originally bound for Sasko. Unfortunately, our captain has been murdered. Our first officer and our propulsion engineer suffered a tragic accident attempting to restart the engines. The flight's navigator had only recently graduated from his training. Regrettably, he made a serious error when he was attempting to pilot the transport. We are now trapped in a gravitational wave that has firmly grabbed us and is forcing us into the massive object A9357821Z, a magnetic anomaly. Realistically, we all have less than one Earth revolution to live. With that in mind, let me suggest that we play a game of cards, more specifically, one of my personal favorites, the game of Yod.
Ye be both damned and daft.
But love is never lost or blind. It knows its true course among the stars. I agree that a bit of poetry improves the situation. Now, for our game of cards. Unfortunately, we don't have the actual cards, so we'll have to imagine them. And, this time, unlike when I watched you play in the earlier segments of our journey, you won't be able to cheat. All play will be strictly by the rules.
You make no sense.
I'll deal. Here is the first public card. Look, it is Mr. Asguad, the mine owner. I believe he was the owner of the W786 operation. Now, my esteemed opponent, Mr. Kentry, the Asguad card is a low value one. He has real value only if a player has a multiplier card that can enhance his value. I'll deal the first private cards, the ones that only the players themselves can see. Oh. Look, I have a multiplier card. It is one that I can apply to the low value Asguad card. Why, Mr. Kentry, it is you. I'll deal the next public card. You can see, Mr. Kentry, that it is the Prioress Eugenia. A very high-ranking card. Maybe the highest we will see in this hand. I'll deal another set of private cards. This time I have a subtraction card. It eliminates the value of other cards. Again, Mr. Kentry, you can see that the subtraction card is you. It is a subtraction card that you can apply directly to the Prioress. You are sweating, Mr. Kentry. I think the game is beginning to make sense. I'll deal another set of public cards. You can see, Mr. Kentry, it is a well-known music hall, the Rigoratorium. I believe, Mr. Kentry, it was a music hall that your family once operated. Your family organized the acts into so-called headliner and secondary acts. Remember, you said that the twins were not a headliner act. It is not language the general public would use. It mattered to your family because you paid the headliner acts considerably more. The twins were one of the lower paid acts. They were not headliners. Mr. Kentry, you made a serious error when you mentioned the Rigoratorium. You forgot that in the Empire Shayod all music halls were banned. Too bawdy. Too sensual. Too undisciplined. You claimed to represent a company with close ties to the Empire Shayod. If you really were such a representative, you would not be openly discussing your experiences at a bawdy music hall in one of the Kingdom JG's major colonies. Seriously misplayed, Mr. Kentry. Misplayed.
You were just babbling off a bunch of gibberish.
Another mistake, Mr. Kentry. Gibberish is a slang expression used only in the Kingdom JG. You are better served by saying nothing. I'll deal another card in our imaginary game. See, it is a box in the cargo shipping area of this transport. When I toured the area, I noticed that it had a shipping label from the company that you were purporting to represent. That seemed alright, but I noticed an anomaly in the address to where it was being shipped. I had been to that planet, but I could recall no such settlement on it. However, I did recall a settlement with that name within a sector controlled by the Kingdom JG. Remember, in the game we are playing, it is important to notice subtle clues as that your opponent's evidence. Recognizing such clues can be very beneficial, especially to a professional player like you, Mr. Kentry. Why would you send a supposedly valuable piece of mining equipment to a non-existent address? The answer, Mr. Kentry, is that you never intended for the box to reach its supposed final destination. Instead, it would be used during the trip. That, Mr. Kentry, led to only two possible conclusions. One possibility was the box contained a destructive device to be activated during the transport ship's journey. And, the second possibility was that the box contained a means of escape for a person or multiple persons. I secretly inspected the box. What is your guess, Mr. Kenturi, about what I found inside?
Conjectures. Non sequiturs. Manufactured arguments.
Good, you used only expressions common to the Empire Shayot. You are learning, even as we play our very serious game. Mr. Kenturi, I had asked for your guess about what I found in the box in the ship's cargo area. Since you are not yet ready to respond, I'll give you a hint. Mr. Kenturi, you are sitting in the captain's seat, facing the ship's flight console. Mr. Kenturi, you are not a suicide terrorist, ready to give his life for his cause and mission. No. Mr. Kenturi, you are a skilled pilot with a highly powered minicraft. Fueled and waiting. Ready to propel your personal escape, while this transport spirals to its eventual death in the clutches of the magnetic anomaly object A9357821Z. Mr. Kenturi, you seek to live while you condemn the rest of us to die. Mr. Kenturi, you seek to live while you condemn the rest of us to die. Mr. Kenturi, you seek to live while you condemn the rest of us to die. I see that you have become very tense. I sense that you are planning to suddenly rush me, grab the disruptor and then use it against me. It is possible, Mr. Kenturi, that your plan might work. I am excellent at defending myself in small spaces, but nonetheless, there is a small possibility that such a plan might work. However, Mr. Kenturi, you should also know that the miner you cheated so unmercifully has now placed Mr. Esguad into your minicraft and has damaged all its propulsion and navigation systems. It will no longer fly. It cannot be your escape vehicle. Like all of us, Mr. Kenturi, it is trapped in the clutches of the magnetic anomaly object A9357821Z. Mr. Kenturi, you have lost our imaginary game. Unequivocally, you have lost. You have no additional chips to play. Still, I will show you one more card. You see, Mr. Kenturi, the card shows the young Laggy Sun Navigator. The one whose fatal mistake led to the extreme predicament that we are now in. I believe, Mr. Kenturi, you altered the navigation system so that when the young navigator made the correct course correction, then system overrode his input, and, instead, sent the ship directly toward the deadly influence of the magnetic anomaly.
Mr. Kenturi, you are a bounty hunter, here to collect the long-standing bounty for the assassination of the Prioress Eugenia, and her associates, Sister Aimley and Sister Tompe. My speculation, Mr. Kenturi, is that you were once a fighter pilot for one of the Kingdom JG's most decorated squadrons. However, you fell down on your luck and turned, instead to cheating at cards and pursuing the bounties on specified criminals. Mr. Kenturi, your plans have come to naught. The peace treaty signed by all parties required the Empire Shayo to pay reparations for the Great Catastrophe. Because of those reparations, the Grey Ladies of Urtrirkt were officially pardoned and allowed to peacefully return to their home abbey. Mr. Kenturi, you have lost.
Trip Home, Chapter 4, A New Captain.
The two sat across from each other in the dim light of a Jerry torch, neither speaking for several minutes, their own mortality clearly on their minds. Then, Kenturi ventured a tentative response.
You were correct in your earlier description of our situation. We are on a transport originally bound for Sasko. Unfortunately, our captain has been murdered. Our first officer and our propulsion engineer suffered a tragic accident attempting to restart the engines. To make our situation even more dire, our flight's navigator had only recently graduated from her training. Regrettably, she made a serious error when she was attempting to pilot the transport. We are now trapped in a gravitational wave that has firmly grabbed us and is forcing us into the massive object A9357821Z, a magnetic anomaly. You are correct, we all have less than a single Earth revolution to live. However, you were wrong when you said that I have no more chips to play. I have a chip, and it is a really big one.
I believe I perceive your point. I may hold the weapon, but you hold the key to our survival.
Exactly. I am a crackerjack pilot. I can get you and this craft home. However, there is no point to saving the lives aboard this craft, if it means that I will still face the gallows. Bet. Better to end it here.
Of course, on Sasko there are no gallows. There never have been. With so much MP23, they use a process of reversing something back to nothing. Execution means being reduced to nothingness. Still, Rico understood the point. The evidence of Kenturi's crimes was strong and the possibility of severe punishment was extremely likely. Mirko hesitated for a full moment.
Get us back to Sasko, and I'll have my mind wiped of all knowledge of you and of your activities.
That is as much as I can ask for.
Captain Kenturi, get us home.
The command console is yours. I'll navigate. You command.
What Kenchiri did not know was that when Cadet Dushko Rurko had attended the Military Tactics College, his very highest marks had been in persuasion. Persuasion, the art of convincing others to accept one's point of view or conclusions. Things had gone exactly as Rurko had desired.
Trip Home Chapter 5 Extreme Bravery.
UMT. I have long known of your great bravery. For many eons you have battled my people, even when you no longer had modern weapons or adequate supplies. You battled us in the distant mountains, in the craggy valleys, on the rivers, under the oceans. You fought us with stealth in our well-guarded cities. Your snipers devastated much of our officer corps. Always a warrior of enormous courage. Always a warrior of fantastic resourcefulness. I approach you as your enemy. Yet, I know you are now very old. I know that you are dying. I know that you no longer seek war. As you know, our transport craft is in dire circumstances. Without its engines, our craft has become entangled in a gravitational wave that is forcing us into the massive magnetic anomaly. I consulted the omens. They showed me your face. Not the face that we see today. No. They showed me the face of a young and fierce and courageous warrior. I ask that you separate from the self that is dying. Separate your ultimate self from the one filled with hatred from long ago. Become, instead, the young, resourceful warrior who can save us from the crushing destruction that awaits us. As one from the Order of the Grey Ladies of the Ertri Rat, I do not fear death. Death is our vocation. We carry our sacred fallen dead to their place of honor and peace. Yet, we are not alone on this craft. The young navigator, your beloved doctors, the twins are innocents, caught in this wave of death. Save them, noble UMT. Show your courage again. Show why you will be applauded and praised, 10,000 generations from now. They will say, he appeared to be old. He appeared to be dying. He appeared weak, unable to carry his own body. He appeared consumed by hatred. Yet, his courage and his resourcefulness saved others. Once he barely knew. But, he was a great warrior. One who always protected the weak. One whose name will be sung for 10,000 generations. UMT. 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 UMT.
Like all such craft operating in the Ghana 40 sector, the transport craft was designed to carry heavy loads to and from the various mining claims. It carried passengers only as a necessary courtesy. It did not offer comfort. Nor did it offer speed. It had six simplex engines, primarily designed for lifting bulky and heavy cargo. Simplex engines are designed for use in extreme, hostile, and adverse conditions. They can endure rock slides, mine explosions, and the abuse of poor maintenance. They dent, but do not break. They rust, but never quit. Ugly. Yes. But utterly unstoppable. Then, why did all of the six Simplex engines fail when they were swept into the harmonic symbolesis? The answer lies in the ionic nature of the rocks trapped by the waves. They were injected into the Simplex engines as tiny ionic particles, billions of particles, but inside the engines became solidified into large chunks. Wave after wave of particles were forced in. Once there, they became solidified chunks, as hard as diamonds. Chunks of a diamond hard concrete. The brave, young frog warrior would first saturate his skin in oxygen and carbon monoxide and then use his soft, malleable body to enter each of the Simplex engines. There, he would scrape the solidified chunks, scraping each of the engine's multiple orifices, allowing the jets to accomplish their propulsion. The frog warrior had no use of his lungs in the vacuum chambers of the Simplex engines, so he was wholly dependent on saturating his skin before entering the engine chambers. Absorption through his skin, however, provided only 20% of the necessary respiration that breathing through his lungs would provide. So, his time in the engines was limited and he always had to be pulled out, wholly exhausted. Everyone could easily see that each time Umpty was pulled from an engine cavity, he was substantially weaker than the time before. 23 times. 24. 25. 26. 41. 42. 43. 67. He gurgled one word, in total exhaustion. Done. His doctors carried him to his folding bed. Within minutes, the warrior Umpty was pronounced dead.
Trip Home Chapter 6 Wave Surfing.
Mirko noticed immediately the change in Kenchiri. What had been a slinky, devious weasel was now an individual with clear function and defined purpose. Kenchiri began to whistle, that is, make a high-pitched noise by exhaling air between his pursed lips. Within minutes, it went from a shrill noise to a recognizable tune. The more confident that Kenchiri became, the more musical his whistle. It had been Mirko's big gamble that Kenchiri had already devised an escape plan from the deadly harmonic symbolesis. When Mirko saw the mini craft in its phony shipping box, he knew that Kenchiri must already have such a plan. The Minecraft had only two small engines and the most minimal shielding, and it was slightly elongated and flattened. At first, the shape puzzled Mirko. Then, he saw Kenchiri's setup. The mini craft seemed to be a surfboard designed for riding on top of the waves. Mirko reasoned that Kenchiri must have already tested his design in a simulation. He must have shown that it would work. Otherwise, he would not have implemented it. Kenchiri was not a gambler. He had survived by cheating, not by taking huge risks. Mirko was certain that the surfboard design had been proven successful in its previous simulations. But, the transport craft was far from a surfboard. It is a clunker designed for lifting. Aerodynamics were never part of its design. Yet, from Kenturi's confident whistle, Mirko knew that the clunker's design did not bother Captain Kenturi. He had, Mirko believed, already devised a strategy for making it surf through the harmonic symbolesis.
That was one brave buddy. I could kiss his slimy skin. When we get home, I'll drink a pint or two in his honor. One crazy, slimy frog. Now is the time to see if what he did works. Come on, fellows, give it a go. Chugga, 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 choo-choo. Come on, boys, give it a kick. Chugga, 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 choo-choo, chugga, 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 choo-choo. You can do it. I know you can. Wow, see, I told you. Except Mr. Five. Give it the goose, you old buzzard. That slimy frog scratched your belly, cut away all that grud. No excuses. There's a bit of a wheeze. Let's give it a real cough. Breathe deep. Now blow it out. Big blow. There you go. Good work, Mr. Five.
Kenturi was obviously pleased with the engines. He began whistling lengthy choruses of music hall favorites. If Mirko had been able to see the six simplex engines, he would have immediately noticed that Captain Kenturi had changed their orientation. They no longer provided thrust to lift or push the craft. Instead, they were configured to pivot the craft around its set axis. It was now a giant corkscrew, moving forward ever so slightly while twisting at 5,000 revolutions. Billions of ionized particles swirled along with the ever-twisting craft, extending its eddy into a small cyclone. At first, the waves overwhelmed the small cyclone, pushing it faster and faster. But as more and more particles were swept into the eddy, the cyclone began to grow, and grow and grow, crushing the previous, well-structured harmonic waves, producing, instead, millions of chaotic swirling motions. On the downhill run of the waves, the cyclone gained lateral speed. At the bottom of the wave, it lost momentum, creating a hole, into part of the wave itself poured. However, another wave came behind, accelerating the craft up the wave. At the crest of the wave, the corkscrew cyclone transformed a rounded top into a sharp peak. What had been a relatively simple wave system where wave followed wave, became a churning cauldron, bubbling and bubbling in many directions simultaneously. It was a teapot without a pot. A waterfall without a mountain. A fire with no need for fuel. The passengers aboard the craft suffered the pummeling forces, the grotesque unexplainable energies, the misery and pain of simple endurance. Yet, Captain Kenturi kept accelerating the simplex engines, making them race beyond their rated capacities, pushing them toward ever greater exertions. After After what seemed to 10,000 revolutions, Captain Kentry yelled, "Now!" He threw the entire craft into a reverse revolution, and with the suddenness of an instant, the transport craft was thrown free of the harmonic symbolizes. It had not taken 10,000 revolutions, only 127. The centrifugal forces pushed the agent transport to speeds that only the Omega-class ships can reach. Originally, the trip to Sasko had been scheduled for 96 Earth revolutions. With the increased speed, it would now only take 9. Captain Kentry was again happily whistling music hall songs.
PNB-7Q, I am again in the Sasko-controlled quadrant. I anticipate docking at our home port within one revolution. It has been, without question, a most eventful trip. This device has recorded it in its entirety. I request that you duplicate it but place it under maximum security restrictions. Under no circumstance should it go public. Before our craft lands, establish a protected zone through which the crew and passengers must pass. In that zone, ensure that everyone has their mind wiped about me, and about my actions. I wish to completely disappear from their consciousnesses. I was not there. Absent. A non-entity. Next, I ask that you set up a grand royal celebratory welcome for Captain Kentry. Tell the press that he performed heroic actions during the direst circumstances of the voyage. Make him a national hero. Also tell the press of the incredible courage of the elderly frogman, Umpty. Treat them both as national heroes, ones that Sasko will honor for generations. When I see you, I'll have further instructions.
Noble son, Dusko Rako. I have complied with your earlier orders. I am happy to report that the mind wipe was successful for everyone, except the three sisters from the Order of the Grey Ladies of the Ertri Rat. None of our techniques worked on them. Not even our most advanced.
I should have known as much. PNB-7Q, I truly do not know whether the noble ladies are my friends or my enemies.
Or both.
Yes, or both.
Why, noble son, were you in the Ghana 40 sector?
I now know the cause of a great catastrophe. I now know the cause of a great catastrophe. I now know the cause of a great catastrophe. Thank you.
A Palooza Springs Audio Theater is a creative collaboration whose purpose is to write, produce, and share original story content through webcast radio experiences.